All right, Jim.
Yes, sir.
You're running into Walgreens. You're out of your shaving cream, your body wash, your deodorant. You're just trying to get in and out. But all of a sudden, you hear the unmistakable opening notes of Tina Turner's 1993 hit, I Don't Want to Fight. And it dawns on you that you actually remember these lyrics. Do you start silently singing along, almost in a whisper? Do you sing along in your head, or are you fully animated and feeling it?
I'm going to go with option D. I will whistle. I'm a big whistle along, you know? I hate to immediately throw you off your game, the multiple choice, but yeah, I would probably whistle. I'm a big fan of humming, or hum along, but it's more of a whistle thing. I've noticed that a lot with my job now, where I'm in grocery stores that have basically, I guess because of rights issues, they can't play more than like 12 songs. And so
yeah,
Publix, man, their soundtrack is a little rough, but I've heard all those songs way too many times that, yeah, as soon as they come on, I guess, keep them going crazy, I'll just kind of whistle along to them.
Songs like Sting's Fields of Gold.
Oh, great one. Great one.
Duran Duran. Come Undone, Duran Duran. How many of the Ordinary World, Duran Duran, big year, 1993. How many of these songs, when they come on, does it remind you of being shuttled around as a 13, 14-year-old to somebody's house or practice, and that's what your mom or your dad's, I don't know if your dad was playing that, but my mom was certainly playing the adult contemporary radio station or the rock station, but...
Really?
Folks, this episode is number 93 of the Dan Time Podcast, and you guessed it, none other than Jim Powell is back, and since it's episode 93, we're going to talk a little 1993 and more centered around the box office hits or maybe some obscure releases from that year. Mm-hmm. But how can you not love some of these songs, whether it's rock, R&B, soft rock, adult contemporary, or hot AC, as they used to call it. Maybe they still do.
Hot AC. Oh, adult contemporary. I got you.
Jim, Whoomp, There It Is, 1993.
That's a good one. Nice. Love it.
Tony, one of my original favorite bands, first cassettes I bought, Tony, Anniversary.
Really?
Came out that year. Tony Braxton, a big year for Tony Braxton. The list goes on. But, Jim, how are you doing today? I'm so pleased to have you back.
Thank you, Dan. Well, I'm great. I'm sorry I keep interrupting you. I'm happy to be here and honored, as always, to be a guest on Dan Time, my favorite podcast.
You're the Steve Martin of Dan Time.
Yeah, that's right. I'm still waiting on you to mail me my jacket so I can wear it when we do these in the future. My six-timers club or whatever it is.
Jim, how about...
Yeah, you talk about those... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. You go ahead.
No, please. It's your podcast, Dan. I should stop interrupting you. I'm going to stop doing that. So please, you captain this ship.
All right. I insist that I go ahead now. I was starting to insist that you go ahead. Now I insist that I go ahead.
All right. Perfect.
Jim, I may have asked some version of this in the past, but let's just say that you're hitting one of those blind spots at Tractor Supply or Lowe's or Publix, and you're about to intersect with some other shopper in their cart. Are you doing the, whoops, excuse me, I'm going to pump the brakes, or are you saying, hey, I'm in the right of way, you yield to me, buddy, I'm not stopping. Do you take that approach, really any direction you're going, or do you try to slow down, be courteous?
Well, I mean, we've all had the awkwardness of both people trying to do go around each other at the same time. So I think I'm probably more of a pause and let the other person make the decision and let them go ahead. Because if you both, go full gas, no brakes, you're going to do the old, the time-honored tradition of the both of you choose the same way. And it's, oh,
sorry.
And Oh, yeah. Sorry. Excuse me.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate it.
I appreciate it condensed, super condensed into like, I guess you could say two syllables. Appreciate.
Yeah, absolutely. So I say a lot of appreciate it. And big one is sorry. Oh, you're fine.
You're fine.
A lot of you're fine's to sorry's. Because, when somebody says sorry, what are you supposed to say? We don't know each other, and this isn't the end of a, you didn't scratch my car getting out or something. We're just going the same direction with our shopping carts. And then you say, sorry, what's your response to sorry? I say, you're good.
Jim, I had a moment.
Or you can say, yes, you are, and they don't like that very much.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I had a moment at the Little League Park. Long, long straightaway. No, everybody knows that everybody's coming. And I think it was opening ceremonies, opening day. And you're walking down a long sidewalk, but there's a couple food trucks out there. There's a Kona Ice and a coffee thing and maybe a hot dog hamburger truck. And I'm walking along. And I'm trying to get to the field in the back. And I've got Wyatt and Vivian. And there's like two lines that are blocking the straightaway path because these people are waiting on coffee. So they don't really want to move around. But as I'm getting closer, you just think that they'll see to maybe a foot or two. They'll just kind of move up or move back. And none of these people moved at all. So it's totally incumbent on you to maneuver around them and find little gaps. And I had a moment where, and I'm not afraid to do this, and no shame, no apology. I'd get into full on sarcasm and say, hey, thanks. Appreciate it. Thanks. They're not budging at all, but you're thanking the absence of courtesy. Well, I think sometimes there's like a paralysis that grips people in those moments. They're like, well, I don't want to lose my spot in line or create some ambiguity about my space here. So I'm just going to not do anything.
Yeah, that's what it is, 100%. Everybody's just terrified that they're going to be that dumb A that, lets this person just... Even though it's obvious they're trying to walk through the line, has anybody ever just walked up and then just stopped and cut the line? No, nobody does that. So give them a little room to walk by. Nobody's trying to cut the line. But my wife is the all-timer for that. Nothing makes her more angry than when somebody tries to cut in line because it's not fair. Mm-hmm. Everything's got to be fair for her.
Oh, yeah.
So, she's the one she would be one of the ones who does not move an inch, so you can just walk through with your two young children on the way to the fields. People can be inconsiderate like that.
But that being said, I don't, I don't continue to stew about it. I don't allow things in traffic to happen, and then 30 minutes later, I'm still fuming and talking to whoever will listen about that guy who pulled out in front of me. Speaking of that, Jim, let's just say that I'm trying to get out of a Dollar General parking lot that's very close to another intersection. So you have that inevitable situation where you're traveling east or west on a major highway. You're getting up to a red light. There's about five cars in front of you. And there's that guy that's trying to pull out. And you're going to have to be the one to stop and wave him on in. Or you could not do that because... Honestly, I think we've got a little carried away with letting everybody in every time. Sometimes it's not good for the flow of traffic. So sometimes I'm the bad guy, and I don't let them in, even when you're in that, when you're kind of making a T. They're trying to get in, and you're that guy.
So are you the guy that physically blocks his or her entrance, or do you just think, the next person behind me will give them room to let him in? Are you going to be, you're the top of the T is what you're saying? You'll block them from getting in?
Yes. My judgment is based on the traffic flow behind me. So if it's wide open behind me, I'm not stopping. If there's two cars behind me, I'm not stopping. If there is a long line behind me, now I'm accommodating. Absolutely. You go. and then you wave them and they still hesitate, and you have to kind of say, no, I mean it. Yeah. And you wave again.
Second wave.
Yeah. I love that at the four-way stops. We may have talked about this before, where someone's clearly reached that stop sign 3 seconds before your wheels have stopped, and they're just waiting. Mm-hmm. They're not sure if you're going to go. So they, and then you still have to, like, I'll kind of look at it if it's like the broad daylight. I'm saying, you got it. Okay. Get way off course here.
No more traffic. Is that the end of traffic talk already?
We're done. Oh man. Jim, how about you got a garbage time question that you want to pop out for me, or you want to move on to the meat of the episode?
Oh my goodness. Let me think. As we're talking, I'll come up with one. I'm sorry. I should have done better homework. I just love your garbage time questions that usually deal with being in Walgreens. Right? You must spend so much time in Dollar Generals in Walgreens. Every one of your garbage time questions starts with, you're in a Walgreens or Dollar General.
Well, we have like 7 Dollar Generals within 15 minutes of our house.
Yeah.
Now, the early episodes when I would just really rag on them, I got to say, my experience here locally has been very favorable. I love the staff. I've really always loved the staff at most Dollar Generals. So I've had some great experiences. When I bring the kids in, they're really sweet with the kids. And
nice.
You know, they put your items in that rotating, you got all the bags, and they spin
bag,
it around.
The bag trundle, yeah, the bag trundle, or whatever you want to call it.
And they make
there's an actual name for that. I got a garbage time question for you now that you've gone off on the other Dollar General tangent. And by the way, Dan Time is always accepting sponsorship dollars. So anybody out there, you know, if you're a Dollar General or a Dollar General, or a Dollar Tree, or a Family Dollar, or anything that has a dollar in the name, Dan would happily take some money from you to talk about how great you are with his kids. So, but Dan, this is my garbage time question for you. Do you, as an adult, a grown man, which is hard for me to believe with us two, that we actually have children and are not children ourselves, when you go into an establishment with, say, a 15-year-old boy behind the counter, and you walk up to the counter, and, you know, standard operating procedure in the business world and life is to give some kind of acknowledgement to the person who's just come into your establishment. But this person behind the counter doesn't say anything.
Nothing.
They just stare at you blankly. Do you then go on with your order without acknowledging them? Or do you say, how are you? And see if you get a response back.
I used to try to engage, but now it's I wouldn't say it's a battle of wits, but it's kind of like, we're not going to, I mean, you don't have to say anything more than, hey, how's it going, or say nothing but make eye contact, we're fine.
Did you just wait for them? But,
man, I've had these experiences where there's no verbal communication, and there's also no eye contact during the entire transaction, which may be like 2 or 3 items, you know, your shampoo or your dog food or whatever. And it's like, they don't even look at you. Wouldn't say it's the norm. It doesn't happen everywhere, but yes, there are. And I'm not picking on this generation, because I think that they've just had a different experience than we've had. But I used to kind of let it bother me. Now I'm just like, all right, well,
when you walk in, do you wait for someone to say something before you say hi, or do you just...
Oh, yeah.
If they don't say anything, they just stare at you blankly, and you just start your order.
I usually...
Start your checkout.
I try to say, hey, how's it going?
Well, customer service, I obviously don't think I'm any of these people are beneath me. I basically work in semi-customer service, so I understand. But Ever and I went into a unnamed dessert store, And I walk up to the counter. The guy just stares at me blankly, does not say a word. So I say, hi. And he says, hey. And not, what can I get for you or anything? I say, how are you today? And he says, good. No reciprocal, I'm good, how are you? So then I say, okay, I guess I'll just start my order. And he just stares at me. So I say, we want this specialty thing that's on your giant LCD monitor right behind your head flashing. Get this today. It's great. It's, and he says, we don't have that. And so I'm like, okay. And then so we order something. He turns around to make it and flips his little screen around. And, of course, the first thing on there is tip. And so I happily reached across and did zero tips.
Nothing.
Because, yeah, I mean, you know, there is a reason why tip is for above and beyond. It's for exceptional service, unless you're, you know, an actual server in a restaurant and you make only tips. This kid was making, you know, an hourly wage. So ever got a big kick out of how I basically pirouetted and hit. I was very happy to hit no tip, which I feel bad about. And I feel bad as somebody who used to live off of tips, but I feel like I was also much more engaging and knew that, you know, I had to be somewhat personable to get and give good service to get a good tip.
Oh, 100%. I don't, you know, again, it comes back to, and I don't know if this is the case. Some people are just, they just don't have, and they never were going to have advanced social skills. But, you know, Jim, you and
I, worse.
We're talking about 1993 today. We had a long period of our, I mean, all of our childhood, adolescence, early, all of our 20s, essentially, where you, and we worked in the service industry, and so you have to have multiple conversations throughout the day, every day. We're going to UAB, or whatever we're doing, you got to engage and interact. And the people I feel bad for are maybe naturally outgoing Gen Z people who they're ready to engage with their friends. They really want to have a philosophical discussion or talk about something at length. And they look around the room and all their friends are just, you know,
in their phones.
Yeah. And then they don't have it at the ready like we did. And I think we just had to be more expressive. People talk about all the money that they wasted in bars in their early 20s. Oh man, I should have invested in this company right after the crash in 08. I kind of look at it like maybe some of that experience was worthwhile. I don't want my kids to have the exact experience. Not that I was doing anything really illicit, but we were just talking all the time with people and, and then working at Mellow Mushroom. It would kind of feel out of place if you were to approach a table on a Friday or Saturday night that came to this boutique pizza restaurant and not be kind of cheerful, energetic, or try to.
And just walk up and stare at them.
I just don't know if some people are. Them. I just feel like some of these kids, I do feel bad for the ones, like I said, that could have had a different experience if they grew up when we did. That they're just like bored with everyday life because everything is so.
Absolutely.
I was listening to I was listening to a podcast last week and talking about the lack of friction between what you want and how you can get it, when you can get it, and all this friction has gone away. It's like the tap of a finger, and you've got what you want. So that's like. Anyway, yeah. So I experienced that. Sometimes I get a little miffed about it, and sometimes I'm like, it's just too bad that they haven't been able to.
If that guy at the dessert place had grown up in 93, he'd probably be a lot more better adjusted if he had seen some of these movies we're going to talk about today.
Yes.
How's that for a segue?
I love it. 1993, Jim, this was, I'm still a couple years away from driving. So when I go to the movie theater, my mom probably dropped me off there. In fact, I know she did. I mean, maybe my dad sometimes. Actually, my dad would take us to movies. And It was so much fun. I mean, I don't know if you do this. Do you go to the movie theater very often? And if you do you still buy the same candy that you liked back then?
Absolutely. Yeah. I was telling you, we went and saw the Minecraft movie yesterday and got Ever's really addicted to the, the slushies or frosties or whatever. They didn't really have those back then, but so I get my large cherry Coke and large popcorn and slather that stuff down with butter. I've never been a big candy at the movie theater guy. I do like it, but my main thing when I'm going to see a movie is, a bucket of popcorn the size of a VW Beetle and a gallon of cherry Coke.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm saying that like candy's I don't mean that candy's unhealthy if I'm eating crap like that, but.
Oh,
it's usually popcorn and Coke.
So I'm the opposite. I'm a candy guy, but I like the smell of popcorn around me. It's kind of like if someone, Natalie likes the popcorn, Warren likes popcorn. So if somebody right there has their bucket and they're just popping away, I like it because the popcorn smell at the movie theater is a big part of why you go.
Yeah.
I'm a Twizzlers guy. Way back in the day, Reese's Pieces.
Ooh.
And Milk Duds, Dots. I think Dots maybe have been the first mints. One.
No Junior Mints?
No Junior Mints. I think everything on the candy rack, I probably would eat it if somebody offered, but Twizzlers is number one.
Number one. Okay, Twizzlers. That's disgusting, Dan, but we can't all share all the same loves or we'd be too simpatico. Yeah, I can't believe you like to eat plastic, cherry-flavored plastic straws. But
I do
you
like...
You do you, man.
Yeah, but I like going to the movies. You still have all that candy, but you usually now the soda varieties. It's kind of like if you go to certain restaurants. I think Firehouse Subs and Wendy's, a few other places have those couple dozen options that you tap around and find the flavor that you want.
Mm-hmm. It's like ink cartridges, basically, for Cokes.
Exactly. All right, Jim, let's get into the heart of the discussion here.
Let's do it.
We may not have time for a top 10, but I think we can touch on a lot of these movies. If you had to narrow your choices of box office hits, and you feel free to throw in a wild card, but favorite movies from 93, starting with... Number five.
Okay, number five. Sorry, can you turn that down, Ever?
Yeah.
Sorry, Danimal. Hopefully you can cut that out or leave it in. That's the life we live. Number five for me would be one that did not rake in the top 10 of the box office for that year, but it's probably definitely my rinse repeat movie of all time, and that's Groundhog Day
with
Bill Murray. Yeah, that was that sucker... You think about, and it's just such a cult classic now, but it didn't make enough money to make the top 10 of the box office that year. So, but just fantastic movie. Bill Murray plays, I can't remember his name, but I know Stephen Tobolowsky's Ned Ryerson. Love that part. Phil Connors was his name in that movie, was Bill Murray's name.
Yep.
So some of those, if a movie's quotable or I still use the quotes from a movie in my day-to-day life, it's definitely a classic for me. So Groundhog Day would be number five for me there.
Man, really hard to argue with that one. That's a movie that if it, people say if it comes on TV and I'm just channel surfing, I'll watch it. I would love to be honest about that. I don't really stop and watch the rest of the movie. If I say, Groundhog Day's on, but it's in theory one that I would like to do that.
Yeah. And especially wake up every day, it's the same exact day over again and you get to watch it again. It's just like the movie. it's one of those that was like, TBS, TNT in the late 90s, that felt like, golly, every day you're channel surfing, before you could just choose what you wanted to watch. It was one of those that would pop up and I did put it on even if you weren't really watching it. Watching it was nice to have on in the background.
Well, Jim, I'm going to go
What about, yeah,
And I've got some movies here that are actually, it's April 6th when this episode is released. There's some very notable movies released April 7th, 93. But I'm gonna factor in the entire year. I'll say my number five, for some obvious reasons here, is Rookie of the Year.
Ooh.
And I might have to flood the zone with baseball movies. If you're familiar with another huge movie that was released that year, but I'll get to it in a minute. Pretty wacky.
The best baseball movie was released later that year. A little spoiler there. Yeah. So yeah, go ahead about Rookie of the Year. I mean, I'm agreeing with you. Sure we're talking about the same movie.
Rookie of the Year, this is 1993. Definitely the peak, this is on a sharp incline of the Cubs fandom years. Now, I wish it had coincided with just a division title, but it didn't. It was going to get worse before it got better, but 1993, watched a lot of Cubs games. Steve Stone, Harry Carey, this is when you're just, you know, you're living and dying.
Well, yeah, baseball was everything for us in, you know, 88 to 93, 94. I mean, baseball is everything in this country. I think we've talked about that in the past, and it's evident by just the amount of baseball movies that have come out. And it's, people say it's easier to make a baseball movie than say football or basketball, just because the stories you can tell. But Rookie of the Year, being a Cubs fan, great, just wacky.
I mean,
Daniel Stern is awesome. So yeah, it's a great movie.
It's a ridiculous plot. But I think Gary Busey's involvement in this movie,
doesn't Daniel Stern get locked in a closet for a day or so?
Yeah.
And he's overstuffing his mouth with sunflower seeds. Mm-hmm. Busey's great, but I think Daniel Stern makes the movie for me.
And his mom's boyfriend tries to sell his contract.
Yep.
That's
one. You know who the mom is? I think the mom in Rookie of the Year is Pete Crow Armstrong, the current center fielder for the Cubs.
Oh, that's right.
His mom.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's pretty awesome that Pete Crow Armstrong ended up a Cub, and his mom was the mother of a Chicago Cub and Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, you got Thomas Ian Nicholas, Gary Busey, Amy Morton. So one of those movies that 1993, I don't think a movie like this would be written for today's audiences, but would actually like to try this out with one of my kids maybe next year, see if they're into it.
Oh, yeah. I bet Warren would love it.
41% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, about a 6 out of 10 on IMDb.
Just garbage. Don't trust the ratings, people. Rookie of the Year's five stars and 10 out of 10.
All right. Who you got at number four, Jim?
Number four, I'm going to go with Dazed and Confused. Mm. Again, a lot of mine do not fit into the top 10 box office, but they just stick with me and were a big part of my adolescence and especially my mid-teens. And I didn't see Dazed and Confused in the theater, but I watched it like a million times, you know, when we were juniors and seniors in high school. So a few years after the theatrical release, but golly, that soundtrack was just a banger. And, all the actors that were in it and who have come out of it. And again, the quotability and Party at the Moon Tower and Be a Whole Lot Cooler. I Get Older and They Stay the Same Age. I mean, you know, McConaughey, Ben Affleck, the kid who touches his nose 1,000 times in that one scene.
Yeah.
and I mean, you know, just is a great, even though it was set in the 70s, it's still, and I'm sure schools today still have cliques. And, you know, it just felt so familiar to me at that age. You know, we weren't the jocks, but we also weren't the nerds or the geeks and, you know, just kind of the other kids on the fringe who like to party. So yeah, Dazed and Confused for sure would be my number four just because of its rewatchability. And it's just a great movie too. Great actors and script and everything.
Yeah, I like that movie. Like you said, you can kind of find a place for everybody and figure out where you fit in the mix. Mm-hmm. I honestly don't think that they, I don't think they had a place for me and what I was putting out there back then. I don't know if I even knew where I should be placed. It was, sometimes, you know, you just, you know, you needed to get involved in something to maybe light a spark. And if you didn't do that, well then, hey, some of that's on you. So looking back, maybe there's some things I could have, you know, club I could have joined and this or that, but whatever. I just think it was, it's an odd time for a lot of kids. And mm-hmm. anybody listen, I don't know if I've got listeners who are still in high school, but if you are, it's not the end all be all. Mm-hmm. if you had kind of a forgettable experience or a bad experience, just wait, it gets better. It's a big wide world out there. And, but yeah, I love that movie. I think that you can see some of your friends, and I liked how it was a mixed bag.
Yeah. I think it's Richard Linklater who directed it, who is one of my favorite directors and has just done. He did another great one. I don't know if you saw it. It's about a, I think it's a community college baseball team in the 80s. It just came out a few years ago. I'll have to find the name. I'll text it to you. I think you'd really like it, too, just because it's very similar. It's almost like a sequel to Dazed and Confused. None of the same characters or anything, but it feels really similar in its vibe, and, you know, because it's set in an earlier decade, and I don't know. It's just a really good – Everybody Wants Some is what it's called. Everybody go check that out if you haven't seen it before and you like Dazed and Confused. It's a great one. It has Glenn Powell, who's in everything now. I think it was like his first big role, but it was great. So, yeah, what's your number four, Daniel?
Jim, this is an impossible year to pick a top a top five. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh, this is nuts. I got to go with Mr. Nanny. You know, I'm going to – no, I'm just kidding.
You kind of really played that up. I wouldn't believe you.
All right. Ernest Rides Again.
Oh, no, really? Okay.
I'll write that one in, too.
I know that's your guy.
I would like to do an episode only on Ernest because I think he's tragically overlooked, for, maybe even forgotten. It just does not come up very much on reels or what. Maybe I'm missing it, but Jim Varney.
He was a special place in time that just, you know, once he passed away, there's never been another attempt at Ernest, thank goodness. Hopefully we don't see a reboot of Ernest anytime soon.
He was
forever
so incredibly talented.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to throw this out there, Jim. I wouldn't say I've watched this in 20 years, but this is one, speaking about my kids, I can't wait to watch it with them when they're going to get some laughs out of it. I'm going to put Mrs. Doubtfire at number four.
Great one. Yeah.
I think this is a role that, who are you going to see in 2025 that can do what Robin Williams did with this role in 1993?
Nobody.
Just a remarkable performance. And I'm not even familiar right off the top of my head of the accolades, the awards. But Mrs. Doubtfire, $25 million budget. I think it grossed, maybe this is the year to date, $441.3 million.
Mm-hmm. That's the year. Worldwide gross, 440-something, yeah, what I saw. And just the ultimate... You know, Mrs. Doubtfire is, like you said, Robin Williams' performance, just a fantastic movie for the family. And Mrs. Doubtfire is the all-timer for being, if the TV that's on mute in your doctor's or dentist's office or DMV or wherever, there's a TV that's on mute. Mrs. Doubtfire will be on that TV somewhere.
Because you can laugh at it without even...
You don't have to hear anything. And just, man, tugs at the heartstrings. And spoiler, you know, it doesn't have the happiest ending or what you would expect. You know, they don't get back together, which is kind of a curveball. But, you know, Robin Williams is still just a great dad. And it shows at the time, you know, divorce was still kind of a rarity back then. are more rare than it is nowadays. And so it was good to see him be a good dad and, you know, stay in his kid's life. And it was a cool move by the filmmakers not to put him in, is it Sally Field? Put him and Sally Field back together. So
right.
Good. It's a good message and a great movie. That's a good number four.
And Robin Williams' character's name in that movie, Daniel Hillard.
There's a real reason it's your number four.
The freelance voice actor. But again, Jim, coming back to the absurd, despite, I mean, quite an effort, more than commendable effort to disguise himself, how in the world is his wife not deeply familiar with the jawline, the eyes, the build? I mean, it just doesn't pass the smell test, but it doesn't have to. Some of these movies in 93, you're a willing participant in a farce. Mm-hmm. You're like, take me for a ride. I'm going to suspend belief and I'm all in. Yeah. And this is one of those movies where it's just a blast to suspend belief.
It is. Absolutely. You got to wonder what maybe Sally Field needed her glasses prescription check, but you couldn't tell that was Robin Williams. And Arrested Development, I don't know if you're familiar with that show. David Cross was on there, and they did a great send-up of that, and exactly what you're saying, how dumb it was that nobody could notice they had David Cross's character trying to get back into good graces with his wife and kid by pretending to be Mrs. Featherbottom. didn't even really shave his mustache, but just put on cake on makeup and totally believed, because everybody pretended like they didn't, that they knew it was him, and he just totally thought he was fooling everybody because he was this amazing actor. But it's another great one too. Check out Mrs. Featherbottom on Arrested Development if you haven't seen that one.
Okay, Jim, number three. We're moving along at a pretty good clip here. Who's your number three? Or what, not who?
Well, number three is my only one off of the top 10 films of that year, and it's the biggest one, and it's, you know, still to this day, one of the most jaw-dropping experiences in a movie theater, and that's Jurassic Park, the original. Mm-hmm. I think you have the grosses there, but it basically made double what Miss Doubtfire did, which is the second highest grossing movie that year. I mean, that just, people flocked to see Jurassic Park, and for good reason. I mean, for me, like, when I watch it still to this day on TV, I feel like it's hard to believe this was over 30 years ago, and the CGI dinosaurs and stuff just look amazing still. And just, you know, so awesome with the suspense and the action, and cast is just badass. And it's just one of those that, you know, big blockbuster movies. It's up there for me in my all time top 10 blockbuster movies. And for sure in the year of 1993, it would be my number, number three choice. So just awesome, awesome movie.
I remember seeing that. I think that's one that maybe my mom took us to see and watched it with us. And at the time, you really had not been presented with something like that as a kid. Mm-mm. In a movie theater. Mm-mm. It was so realistic. As much as small children love dinosaurs, it was probably terrifying.
But just rad, you know, when you're 14, it's a little different. Yeah, probably 8-year-olds or something would have been a little too much. But yeah, if we were 14, you know, boys, we basically play with army men, construction equipment, and dinosaurs. And usually you would kind of gravitate towards one of those three to be your biggest, most favorite of the toys. And so I think dinosaurs were mine. And yeah, before Jurassic Park, they had movies with dinosaurs, but they were either stop motion, you know, like claymation, where, you know, that just looks totally cheesy, or they were puppets. So they couldn't be on the scale of what he does, you know, with that movie. And I still remember, like, you know, I think it's Sam Neill, and I can't remember the actress's name, but when they first show up, you know, it's a meme now where he takes his sunglasses off because he sees these brontosauruses, you know, the brontosauri grazing. I mean, that was our reaction in the theater, man. It was like, holy crap, that looks really cool and really real. So, you know, way before CGI became what it is today, where it's in Dollar Tree commercials. It was a very special technique, and they spent bukus of time working on it. And man, just the action, the set pieces, the kitchen with the velociraptors hunting the kids,
mm-hmm.
you know, the T-Rex stomping up and the water glass shaking. I mean, that's just phenomenal stuff. That's, you know, Steven Spielberg at the height of his game right there for me. Give me that way over some of his more recent stuff.
I'm, you know, this is pretty close here, but Jim, I'm going to go with The Pelican Brief.
Oh, really?
And
why?
You know, I love Denzel Washington, Julia Roberts.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these pairings that you just missed, it was what made 1990s cinema so captivating and electric. And, you know, you had the stuff in 95, 96, 97, the Pacino and De Niro movies. I think Heat was 95. Michael Douglas and Demi Moore, Woody Harrelson. We didn't know how good we had it.
Yeah, agreed.
But The Pelican Brief, because I think when I started to revisit books and maybe trying to just challenge myself to read a book again in my 20s, Travis recommended, he said, John Grisham. He said, I know he's like pretty mainstream, but just check out one of the books. I think he gave me one. I read Bleachers,
mm-hmm.
The Last Juror, and The Pelican Brief is based on the 1992 novel by Grisham.
Mm-hmm.
But did you see this one when it came out, or are you familiar with the plot?
Jeez, I am not, Dan. This is one that I may have seen, but I literally don't remember seeing it. So I remember commercials for it now that you say Denzel and Julia Roberts, but no, give us a quick synopsis.
So it's centered around the assassinations of two Supreme Court justices.
Mm.
And a law student, who's played by Julia Roberts, she then writes a brief trying to lay out the motive for these killings.
Mm.
And she's having a relationship, having an affair, I guess, with her law professor. And
is that Denzel?
They go over this brief together, yeah. And but then he's later killed in a car explosion.
Mm.
And she goes
suspense kind of action, suspense.
Yeah.
Okay.
So but anyway, it's a suspense thriller because she writes this brief. Now she's been targeted by the killers, the assassins, and they're the ones that set that car bomb for her professor. So then she goes on the run, and another journalist is trying to assist her, and then they together try to unravel the conspiracy.
Okay. I love a good conspiracy thriller.
So this was, you know, 93, forget the release date, because if it's in the spring, we're in eighth grade. If it's in the fall, we're in ninth grade. You're just starting to get, I hate to say bandwidth, but you're starting to be able to process some of these plots at the movie theater. You're not, mm-hmm. you're not 11 or 12 anymore. You're either about to be in high school or close. And so this kind of reminds me of that time period where stuff like The Pelican Brief or A Time to Kill, which I think was mm-hmm. a couple of years later, Kiss the Girls, Sling Blade. I think Sling Blade was maybe the year we graduated, but just represents that type of movie. It was getting past the action comedy.
More of a thinking, people talking movie.
Yeah.
than what you liked prior to your teens, probably.
And honestly, some of these movies, when we get to number one, it will be not so much, I saw it in 1993 when I was 14 and I was enamored with it immediately. It came out in 93, I did see it, and over time, now I see that it's such a transformative
mm-hmm.
piece of art.
Yeah. Oh, agreed.
But love Julie.
All right, should I do my number two?
How do you feel about Julie Roberts and some of her more serious roles?
Geez, Dan, I don't really think I think a lot about Julia Roberts.
Are you a Julia Roberts guy?
No. I think she's a great actress, but I'm not going to go rush up to see something just because she's in it, or I wouldn't have 20 years ago. She doesn't seem to be making a whole lot of movies anymore. I think she's a great actress, though. Pretty Woman was good. Can't really think of anything else she's been in that I'm a huge fan of.
You didn't like Pretty Woman?
Yeah, I just said I like Pretty Woman, but I can't think of another movie.
Notting Hill, Aaron Brockovich.
No.
How about Jim, My Best Friend's Wedding? Surely you saw that one.
No, I did not.
Runaway Bride.
A rom-com guy.
She reunites with Richard Gere?
Is it Richard Gere? He hasn't been in anything in a long time either.
Richard Gere.
Good old Richard Gere.
Richard Gere.
I think Richard Gere was our electronics teacher in high school.
I always liked Richard Gere.
Yeah.
I know he kind of got that romantic comedy supporting actor tag.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a heartthrob maybe at the time, but I like some Richard Gere. Richard Gere. Oh, Primal Fear. That's one of the movies I love. Richard Gere movie.
Great one. Great movie with Ed Norton.